This episode of Bald Move Television is brought to you by Keeps. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/baldmove. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bald Move Television podcast. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
And today we're going to be talking about a couple subjects. HBO's new documentary they debuted this weekend, Leaving Neverland, about the Michael Jackson pedophile scandal, as well as a Hulu original, Into the Dark, which is their anthology kind of horror series. And the episode we watched is Treehouse, and we're going to be talking about that. And Jimmy Simpson. Jimmy Simpson's star turn in that. And I think that's it.
Is this the one? This is the one that's going to make him finally famous?
Yeah.
Finally where people recognize his face and name?
Yeah. What do you want to start with? I feel like maybe we should start with Treehouse.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. What did you think of... So this is a horror anthology. This is like, I think, the sixth episode in this series that I hadn't even heard of until we started, you know, doing the trailer prep stuff that we've been doing each week.
It's Blumhouse Productions, is that right?
Right. It's like kind of like an offshoot of that very successful kind of horror factory. This is kind of a Me Too horror tale about a man in a position of power.
A truly fucking awful human being.
Mm-hmm. Who, you know, does the typical powerful, rich, famous man thing of pressuring women into sex and using his power imbalances to... prey on women, and he's done it since his teenage years. What did you think of the episode before we get into particulars?
I did not think that it was a super well told story. I felt confused through the first half of it, as to like what are the connections between all these characters, because I understand that they're there, but they only really make an explicit connection, I thought, between like one character and Jimmy Simpson's character. And then they kind of just infer the rest through that connection to the other character. And I found myself questioning, like, how are all of these people connected? Because they're speaking like they are, but they never really gave me the clues to figure that out. So I was left confused by the first half. The second half feels oddly artificial for the climax of the thing. But, like, it's an hour and a half movie. How much can they really do with the time they're given? I don't know. I felt like, okay, I see what you're doing here, but I did not really enjoy my time with it.
Yeah, there's to add on everything that you said, what I think is right on. I also felt that this felt cheap in a way that I think is unfortunate, because there's a couple points, like some of this hangs up with the rest of like kind of prestige modern television, but there's a lot of stretches in this film where just you can tell that the budget is not great and it's kind of shoestring, and they spent probably a lot on some of the names attached to the project. And it's too bad, because I thought there was some really good ideas here. And I'm waiting for someone to make a definitive like Me Too horror story, because, you know, there's a perfectly valid artistically way to look at the relationship between men and women as like this tenuous relationship between a prey species and their predators. They're much larger, more powerful prey.
I mean, this is going to permeate everything we talk about today, because that Leaving Neverland thing is also kind of a prime example of a Me Too sort of thing, you know?
Yes. And how, like, you know, abuse isn't just about women. It's also about men and young men, and Terry Crews can be Me Too. Like, there's a the problem, I think, other than the fact that the show is cheap looking in places because it doesn't have enough budget, is that it's also written and directed by two men. And there's a couple points where, like, I think that this is a story that would be best told by women, because the nuances are what makes things scary. And I think these guys are kind of like, our hearts and heads are in the right places, but I'm a couple years beyond their, you know, a couple years of thinking and kind of understanding the issue. And there's a couple places where, like, boy, they really could have spiked the ball here, and really for men, it's this weird valley where the men that need to see this are not going to watch it, and if they do, they're going to be offended and huffy about it. And for me, this is kind of like funny. It played as kind of like a broad parody and almost like a Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I thought was an unfortunate tone because the subject matter is certainly worthy of being taken serious and being scared by.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a couple of, you know, lines in the thing that make me think it's a joke. Like, he says something about, like, oh, let me go, you something bitches. And they're like, we're not something bitches. Angry bitches. We're not angry bitches. We're angry witches. And
no,
I was like, oh,
right.
My God. Is that a joke? Is that a joke? And if so,
why are you joking?
Shame on you. It's not funny.
Yeah.
It's a bad, dumb joke that I already saw coming a mile away. I knew that they were, like, playing witches here.
Right.
But, like, it also doesn't help that Jimmy Simpson's character is thoroughly unlikable in every way, mm-hmm. in every regard. He does not have a human relationship that shows any compassion or caring with anyone.
Right.
And so it's easy to write him off as just like, oh, well, this is an obvious asshole. You know, this doesn't apply to normal human beings. And I feel like it would have gone a long way if we sort of liked Jimmy Simpson in some regards and then came around to the idea that, oh, actually, no, he's doing things here. He is making those excuses for his actions that they point out later. It was too, like, hit you over the head with it.
Yeah. Let's go into specifics now. So if you want to see this and you want to be spoiler free for it, then I guess now is where you want to jump ahead to our Michael Jackson coverage, because it's that's more of impossible to spoil, honestly.
Oh yeah.
So I thought that there's a couple points where this thing elevates into something a lot better, like where they have him paralyzed and chained up and they're reenacting his abuse, like literally in a way that, like, he wants to dismiss as, like, well, that's not how it happened, but you can tell that's exactly how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty instructive, because I think a lot of people get the idea, and this is going to be a theme of the Michael Jackson stuff, too, that abuse is a scared individual pinned up against the wall with the door being locked, and there's no one there to hear them scream. But abuse is more like, you need this to get to advance in your career, and you're going to have to use your body for it. And
it can be, yeah, that's certainly one of the things that it is.
Yeah, like it's a train, like this kind of, like, it's more of like it feels like an opportunity being extended that's common and everyone does it, and you're never going to get the access because you obviously are not good enough to be. It's an attack on a person's self-worth. It's attack on the person's place in their career. Like, that's one of the reasons it's so insidious and it fucks with women.
It's manipulation.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be physical manipulation. It can be emotional manipulation or, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of different things. But yeah, that's kind of why I felt like this was a little too it felt silly in some places, because I don't know. I guess, yeah, it does come back down to earth when I guess he's sitting in the car with his sister, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think that's some of the best stuff, is when she's just trying to get him to recognize that these are all excuses that he's made to cover up behaviors that are not acceptable, but he wants to think they are.
Yeah, no, like a lot of there are a lot of guys that have done some bad shit and they're desperately saying, well, this was just how everybody did. And like, mm-hmm. what they're waking up to is like, no, we all didn't do this.
Yeah.
And
maybe the people in your circles did.
Yeah. And we're not going to provide cover for that kind of shit anymore. And we're going to increasingly start covering up. And it's not like now that we know that you're not just joking about this shit, that we're going to start calling it out. I also like the idea of the thing that's cool about witches, and they played with this idea in like some seasons of American Horror Story, is it's a way to flip that power dynamic we talked about in the outset, the predator prey, that like, what if in some certain situations women actually had the upper hand,
mm-hmm.
and they could prey on the men with impunity? I think that's a really cool concept to explore, and it's weird that this episode kind of double subverted it, made it all of like a trick. Because I don't know, because one of the things me and Cecily have been thinking about lately is like, kind of a thriller type of movie that's about women that identify these shitty, like, high-powered executives and movie executives that prey on women, and they seduce them and then rob them blind and murder them, like, as a serial killer kind of situation. And, like, because I think there is a way to make a really tight script that would be terrifying, but also, like, justice boner kind of thing. And somebody's going to find that right tone, that right kind of like revenge and exploitation, and make a lot of money with it. Unfortunately, this episode's not, that doesn't hit that mark either.
So let me ask you, can you clarify the problems I was having with the relations of all these characters here? Like, they all kind of grew up in the same town and knew each other from school?
They're all friends of the girl who he raped in high school, I think.
Okay, and so he kind of knows all of them. Like, obviously his sister's in on it.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing that left me stumped, sort of.
But they also, I think, it might be called as a sorority. These all might be part of the weirdo sorority that she joined to.
Yeah,
that he was kind of scornful of early in the episode.
I think there was at least one of them who he didn't really know.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so that leaves me at the end thinking, okay, well, this worked because it was all like all of the lead up to it was predicated on this relationship that they had already. How are they going to repeat this? Because their goal is like, okay, one asshole at a time, we're going to take him down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I guess you'd have to come up with an entirely different plan for someone who you're not as familiar
with. It'd have to be like a Charlie's Angels thing, where part of like the thing would be intense research on the target, so you would know the proper emotional fulcrums to push.
And spending, you know, a while earning their trust, earning you know, your way into their good graces, or
although
their
I do think it's
inner
not
circles.
That. I think the show does a pretty good, convincing job that a guy like this Jimmy Simpson, that this type of abuser, really just needs a bottle of wine and some attractive women to like. That's
well,
all the
well,
trust
I think
he needs.
Shouldn't have,
right?
They shouldn't necessarily have had him like know all these people then. Because like that.
But wasn't that the part of the thing is that he should have known them, but he didn't.
But then he says things like he does know them. I don't know. See, this is why I was very confused by most of the lead up in this episode.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to figure out the relationship and exactly
how
much he knew.
It's a little bit of like
him.
I was complaining about with Captain Mar-Vell last night, where it felt like there was a scene missing between Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson, like their character between them initial meeting and then them kind of becoming buddies. There is like a missing scene where they developed the rapport.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow bridged all the cultural gaps and mistrust and suspicions, and I felt like there's that a little bit there too, but I think it's because I think they give this big like elaborate speech, like when they've got him drugged up and chained, like explaining all their connections, and then there's still a lot of episode left, so I think maybe you got confused between those interactions
for sure.
But yeah, I don't know why everyone had to know anybody. Like, I think it would also be kind of a fundamentally interesting / scary concept if there was a group of women who were using nonviolent, or I guess, you know, they're confining a person against their will, drugging, but they're not killing them. They're not non-lethal methods of deterring male predators. And they would just come in like the A-team, like, okay, who's the sister that knows all the deets? Let's work up a thing, blah, 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 like... I think that might have been more interesting and had less problems to it.
Could be
cleaner. Yeah. But honestly, here's the thing. Like, one of the things that I realize, and probably because it's men in the production, is like in the end, and then maybe, I don't know, maybe this is actually intentional, but he goes and like bears his soul to his daughter about what a shit he's been and how he wants to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if Jimmy Simpson had really learned his lesson, he would realize how inappropriate it would be to barge in on this little girl on her mother's, you know, his ex-wife's new wedding day and demand time so he can give this big, confusing, emotional speech. Like, if I think that what that woman, that 14-year-old girl should have done is like, Dad, guess what? You're doing it right now. You're doing the shit you say you don't want to do. You're doing it right now. You're making all this shit all about you. It's not about me and my feelings. You're trying to make yourself... But I don't think the show is aware enough to understand that, like, this guy's realization of what a shit he's been and the fact he's been scared straight is his kind of his cross to bear. But he immediately takes that guilt and shame and throws it onto his daughter and makes it weird on his mom, their mother's wedding day. And the mother, instead of them both being pissed about it, they treat it like it's like a big positive character development. And that's just stupid.
Yeah, I mean,
that's some shitty behavior that he was doing there at the end.
Compounded by the fact that I don't think this changes a man like that.
Fuck no.
I think this scares the guy for a week.
And then it's like those damn bitches.
Yeah, he goes, those angry bitches. Yeah,
right.
He goes through, you know, another week of his life not seeing a single tattoo. And he's like, back to my old ways.
Yeah.
He gets back to his kitchen and it's like, okay, shooting my reality show again. I'm an asshole again.
Right.
So I mean, it's a little fairy tale at the ending, right? Like with the idea that, oh, he's going to, this is the moment where he totally changes everything.
Yeah. And they also think there's a stumble to have the, like, the Cletus type character. Like, he could have been an actual ally. And instead of being like a man that they, that's like a simple minded guy, they twist up, like, mm-hmm. you know, part of it could be is like, it's, this is not just a women's job alone to police the world vigilante style. Like, as Gillette has suggested, maybe it's also the responsibility of the men to do some of this policing as well, or maybe the majority of it. So I don't know how much more I want to talk about this, because I think the rest of the material of Michael Jackson is much more inherently interesting to talk about. Do you want to talk about,
are you interested in any more
Into the Darks?
No, I want to leave Neverland.
Okay.
And I don't want to look back.
Okay. Okay, before moving further to the episode, I want to do some housekeeping. On Bald Move Television, the Bald Move TV feed, which you can search your favorite podcast app or repository like iTunes or Google Play, search for Bald Move TV. You're listening to it right now, so I guess you know how to find it. Yeah. Next week, Cecily and I are going to be doing a review of this first episode of Season 2 of American Gods on Stars. We're also on the Bald Movies feed, which you can find similarly to Bald Move TV by searching for Bald Movies on your favorite podcast spot. We reviewed Captain Marvel last night, or excuse me, Captain Marvel. And next week we're going to be taking a look at the Chiwetel Ejiofor debut directorial movie, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. We actually saw it this week, but we ran out of time to talk about it, so it'll be out in the Bald Movies feed next week. If you're a club member, Season 3 of Quip has begun to drop. We had the first episode out last week. Another episode will be out next Wednesday. And also, Cecily and I, in addition to doing the American God stuff, we are doing playthroughs of Super Mario games on twitch.tv/baldmove on Wednesday nights and some select weekends, like tonight. This Friday, we're going to be starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can see the archive of that at youtube.com/baldmove or get in on the live pulse-pounding platforming action at twitch.tv/baldmove. Leaving Neverland. We talked about this a little bit on the preview or our prep podcast or a prep video that we do on Twitch on Mondays. But I had there was a narrative going around for several years that I'd kind of bought into, and I think it'll be interesting to explore where this narrative came from and why I was susceptible to it. But that, like, you know, Michael Jackson did have several cases brought against him. He beat them all. There's tons of people that say that he never did this. He's also just a weird guy who had a very weird upbringing, and he's beat by his dad, and he was inappropriately sexually exposed as a boy by his brothers, and he was traumatized by it, and he had this kind of like eternal childlike innocence, and he just liked to spend time with children because that's what he related to, and there was nothing sexual to it, and there's nothing that's ever been substantiated. It was just a bunch of greedy parents that were, their lies were exposed in court. And I'm like, I could almost believe a weird guy like Michael Jackson, who is so famous that he's almost an alien, could have, it'd be like Superman sleeping with boys. Like, okay, that's weird, but what would a man from Krypton that can shove planets around, who would he relate to? Maybe he find, but You're not even a half hour into this documentary before you're like, oh shit, this is super credible. This is exactly what happened. Michael Jackson, maybe he came by it honestly, but he's a total monster. I had a 100% 180 on this. What was your experience watching it?
Yeah. So I think the most affecting stuff for me came in the final few, more than a few minutes of this documentary, when they started breaking down the thought patterns and the reasons that they didn't come forward first. Because look, this is a sensitive subject, right? Like, Michael Jackson, the king of pop, a fucking idol to millions and millions of people.
Probably the most famous person in our lifetime.
I would say easily. People are very, very quick to defend him, and I understand that. Like, I'm myself not a person who idolizes very many people. I certainly don't idolize Michael Jackson, but I love his music. Mm-hmm. I think he's an amazingly talented person. But you have to look at this pattern of behavior and accusations and start to say, okay, where does this cross over from he's a beloved figure who is a little bit weird to he's done some truly heinous stuff? And for me, it was when they started outlining their mental state during during and after the abuse, and also leading up to and after the coming out.
Yeah, and
it's extremely accurate to how I understand these things to work.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, I saw, because I dabbled into, did you watch the Oprah special afterwards?
No.
Because I actually thought, and I gotta say that I think if you're a parent, you really have to watch this. If you're a parent, especially of young children, you intend to be a parent someday, you really need to watch this to kind of be up on how, because I do feel like that this is something, like you said, it's a sensitive subject, not just because of Michael Jackson, but because we really don't talk about child sexuality and abuse, and the way we think of it is in terms of, like, I just got done watching a sci-fi original, Happy, and it's this, like, disgusting monster, dirty, homeless Santa Claus that's abducting children in sacks and keeping them in boxes, and that's a pedophile, right?
Sure.
Or pedophiles like the creepy uncle. But this, where, like, because, like, famous or not, all this grooming shit kind of works the same way.
Yeah.
And this is the, like, if these guys got together and coordinated with their friends and family and each other to tell the perfect tale of how predators and pedophiles actually work in the thought process, then it's got good fictional value. I happen to believe they're telling 100% the truth. And but it's stuff that, like, blows people's minds. Like it's like everything you think you understand about the psychology of child predators and their victims is, like, the exact opposite that you would think it would be.
Yeah, like you would assume there'd be a lot of anger there at the victimizer,
or the right? Next day you suck Michael Jackson's penis and you're going to feel raw and like a victim,
and that you would never defend a person like that,
right?
Jesus Christ, you would never do that. But that is not how it works. Often
you don't see that with an 8-year-old. They love this person,
right?
And they respect this person, and what this person is doing to them usually feels good. Like, there's a reason that kids 2 years old have their hands down their pants all the time, because touching your genitals feels good, and when someone that you love and trust touches your genitals, it feels really good. That's why we have sex, that's why we engage in sexual relationships. And all those physical wires, they're there for children. The horror is that, and I think that's the thing that really keeps victims in their places, it doesn't feel wrong when you're in it. And what I think was really telling, and why I think so much of the people that are hating these guys and sending them death threats, which is absolutely disgusting, are not getting it, is that when you think about yourself as a child, there's a really profound point they make, that you don't ever think of yourself as a child. Like, you always, every time you look back in your life, it's like the adult, mature version of you passing judgment on the actions you did as a child. But when you have your own child, like these men, when they had, like, their own boys and they grew up and they got to be 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and they're like, Jesus Christ, this person would have zero defense against a Michael Jackson.
And if I were to find out that someone did what Michael Jackson did to me, to my son,
yes,
I would fucking kill them.
You would know, like, what a violation it is. You couldn't feel it because of the manipulation, and but you could clearly see it in a third party, and that's what is, that's just the truth, man. That, like, that stuff they're talking about, that's exactly the psychology that traps people that are being victims and defending their victimizers, because it's this. They're conditioned to keep this as a secret, and they made this very clear that Michael Jackson conditioned them from the very early that like, we are in love, and this is how we show our love, but people are going to try to rip us apart, and if they do that, it's going to end your life, it's going to end my life, and, you know, the kid's going through this, and they love and trust this person, and this is an enjoyable experience, and they don't want it to end, and they end up carrying their abuser's water for them, which is another way to keep them victimized for years and years and years. So... And also, the other thing that people don't, like, they think that, I think the conception is that if Michael Jackson was a predator, he'd be fucking Macaulay Culkin for sure. He'd be fucking Corey Feldman for sure. All these other kids he didn't fuck, like, pedophiles are like everybody else. It's like they don't go after everybody. They have a type.
Right. Yeah.
And the easiest types are the ones that are kind of needy and have a little bit of vulnerability. And
right, that's the thing. Like, he probably maybe, poked around the edges a little to try and see if that would go anywhere, and maybe Macaulay Culkin was a little bit more resistant to it, and he knew that if he tried to pursue it, things might go badly, so he backed off. Like,
yeah, Macaulay Culkin was probably starstruck with Michael Jackson, but not in the same way that...
Right, I mean, he's been around stars since
And these kids weren't just, like, Michael Jackson fans. They were kids that spent years practicing their routines in the mirror and copying his style and, like... being all about Michael Jackson. It's not like they called into a radio station one day and won a prize. It's like this was work that they put in through contests and practicing dance routines, and it's
yeah. And I think the documentary did a great job. I read a like a paragraph of a review that was conducted with the creator of the documentary, and he was talking about how he needed to get these graphic, detailed explanations of exactly what physically happened sexually between, you know, Michael Jackson and these kids, because, and I think it's exemplified when they show the interview that Wade did with Matt Lauer in 2011 or something, when he finally realized, okay, I need to come out about this. In that interview, he says, you know, what did Michael Jackson do to you? And he said he sexually abused me. Mm-hmm. That's an easy thing to look at and say, well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, what does sexual abuse mean? That's an easy thing for anybody to say, right? To jump in and just say, oh, he sexually abused me. But when you describe it in these graphic terms, mm-hmm. I think it brings a weight to it. It makes you sort of understand the severity of it. It makes you understand a lot more deeply what this kid was going through.
Yeah.
And it's not something that's as easily brushed away.
Well, and it's also...
So I think the documentary did a great job of, like, building up to that.
And there's also a lot of subtext there, too. Like, just like we talked about in Lorena Bobbitt, it's interesting to see Matt Lauer, who we now know is a powerful, famous man who used his power and fame and position to take sexual advantage of young, inexperienced women.
I was watching Matt Lauer's face as much as I was watching Wade's
interview.
It's
fascinating watching him as a prosecutor, like, and I know he's not intentionally, but like, it's weird watching a person who uses his power to victimize other people interview like a victim, and what a massive conflict of interest that is. Mm-hmm. that Matt Lauer never obviously divulged, like, how many of these interviews that he's done like this, that it's kind of like it's a taint, right? Like, he should be forced, like, by the laws of journalistic ethics, he should have to turn to the cameras like, by the way, I bang every hot 21 to 23 year old that walks through these doors with this hoping to get a journalistic career. And like, you know, that would be like, okay, well, why are you so skeptical? Why are the that would let us know, like, if he was interviewing fucking Tyson Chicken CEO and he owned stock in Tyson Chicken, he'd have to divulge that or recuse himself. But this shit is this bubbling undercurrent that's going through, like, this the Hollywood media and any place that there's wealth and power imbalances. I thought it also did a good job of showing how, I think, Michael Jackson grew in sophistication of how he groomed people. Like, you look at the time and effort it took for him to gain the first family's trust that he started with when Neverland wasn't the big thing that it was. Like, it's, you know, he kept adding to it. And then you saw how, like 5 years later, how efficiently he was able to hyper groom this Australian family. A lot of people, I think that's just showing a predator that's getting more sophisticated in his approach and is getting more confident, and and he's had practice.
Yeah, I mean, this is I think of shit like what is Rob Zombie's first feature film?
House of a Thousand Corpses?
Yeah, something like that. With you know, the family of, like, clowns who has, like, sort of created their life around kidnapping and murdering people.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like was happening here. Michael Jackson created this fantasy world in which he was able to do these things to these kids and built his life around that.
Enabling it.
Yeah. And it's creepy as they show, like, Neverland getting more elaborate, you know, and all these places that they could go to be alone, to do these
with
acts. It's really creepy when I start thinking about it in those terms.
Yeah, how this was just one massive prop that he used to gain children's trust and isolate and get the kids that he was attracted to isolated to where he could, you know, feel them and their parents out for, like, what kind of relationship he could arrange with them.
And I know we've turned off everybody already who doesn't agree with us on this. Because clearly I think he's guilty. I think you think he's guilty. There are people out there who probably don't think he's guilty. And I would ask them to look at the pattern. Look at Michael Jackson's life.
Yeah.
And say, what is normal about that? And what aspects of that would you be comfortable bringing into your own life? Like, are you yes. comfortable letting your child go to a stranger's house and spend the night? Someone you've known for 2 days, like came to a backyard barbecue on the 4th of July, on July 6th. You've had a couple phone calls with them. Are you letting them go stay at that person's house?
Yeah.
They don't have any kids. Like, I don't understand the mental process that has to take place to say, well, no, absolutely, this is not okay in any circumstances, except, you know, as Michael Jackson.
Right.
He's fine. He loves kids. Like,
I have a hard time with the parents. I want to keep, because here's the other thing for the, I maybe we should have started with this, but I think when I was reading these defenses of Michael Jackson online and the discrediting of Wade and the other kid.
I didn't read any of those.
I shouldn't have, but I thought, like, you know, in interest of just to see how this is being defended, you know, and it seems like it's mostly just like, well, these guys lied on the stand. They're admitted perjurers. So why should we believe them now? But a lot of it is also like denying the lurid details of Mike, because, like, you know, how many people actually was in the room with him when he's abusing his children? None. That's
zero. Yeah, that's
right. That's the whole fucking point.
Right.
But here's the thing. Take all the sexual aspects out, because the other stuff is public information. It's not disputed. The fact that this Michael Jackson set these kids up with fax machines and sent them 5, 10, 15, 30 faxes.
Yeah.
Of increasing desperation. Oh, little one, I haven't gotten a fax from you for a while. Can I get a fax? Can I get a fax before Beckett? If this is a man with an adult woman, you would say that's an emotionally abusive relationship. That is this, and now you think about this inappropriate, abusive, emotional, and again, none of these facts are in dispute. The fact that he would spend 6, 7, 8 hours on the phone with them, sobbing about how lonely he is, talking about how bad his life, how they're the only thing in the life is his life that makes them feel bad. Like, these are shit. These are facts that no one's really arguing about. They have the facts. Like, one of the creepiest things is just a slideshow of the facts that he sent, these facts, F-A-X faxes that he sent these children at all hours of the day. And, like, you know, one mom came up, they come home from, like, shopping, and there'd be, like, a carpet of them on the floor because he's just, like, desperately sending faxes. That shit is not okay.
Right.
That shit should get him in plenty of legal problem. He should have had, like, restraining orders. He should that shit is not okay with that type of relation to happen to adult. He's having them with children, and that's why it's super inappropriate. That's, you know, there's so many reasons why it's inappropriate to have sex with children. But I feel like we have to sometimes break them down because, like, that's how people start finding. That's how motherfuckers start finding ways to walk between the raindrops. These are children who society says can't give consent to anything because they don't have maturity enough to understand any time a long term commitment, and you're putting them into an adult sexual relationship. Number two, so they can't give consent. You're raping them. There's an implicit power imbalance. You, by virtue of you being on the planet 2-3 times longer than them, you know more shit, and you're much more easy to manipulate, and you're jaded, and they're not. The list goes on and on, but one of the things is you're giving, like, your first sexual relationship is fucking intense. Imagine it's with someone that is so much more powerful than you and so much more famous, and the whole world is saying, like, there's this montage of, like, Princess Diana giving him an award and Ronald Reagan giving him an award, and everyone's saying he's this heroic citizen, and you're this person that he's having sex with and being infatuated with, and then he's going to completely break up with you in a year when you hit puberty and find another little boy.
Yeah.
And these kids are going to go through this. I mean, that's I don't feel like you should have to say why that's wrong. Like, that's just, it is, like, this is going to, and also you add, so then you add all the implicit guilt and shame they have of knowing that, you know, that Michael Jackson is telling them that this is, you know, people think this is wrong, but this is how we show our love, and you got to keep secrets, and you can't trust your parents, you can't trust any kind of women, you can't trust your parents, they're going to try to cut us apart. Like, when you hear these men talk about their adult lives and how they disassociate from reality and how they have a hard time trusting people and forming relationships and they have these intense feelings of shame and they don't know why. And when they think about, well, it can't be the thing with Michael because that was actually, right. Yeah, that was a fun, I look
I
back
good
at that.
Memories of that
that
yeah.
was my best time. What a fucking mind fuck, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, the idea that there's a power imbalance just inherently between adults and children,
mm-hmm.
and then you amplify that with you being the most famous person in the world.
Yes.
Like,
this is
it
the
doesn't
most
get, make
extreme.
It any better.
This is the most extreme.
Yeah.
And the thing that, like, what makes me sad is I think there is a need for mentors, male mentors, mm-hmm. for boys and girls. And I think of, like, you know, like Peyton Manning hosts a camp in Indianapolis every year where he takes some at-risk youth. And I'm thinking, like, what an amazing experience it would be to be, like, a 13-year-old boy or a 14-year-old girl and have, like, Peyton Manning kneel down and put his hand and spend, like, a couple minutes and praising you and, like, how that, like, could really charge up your battery and do good.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, what if Peyton Manning's fucking these kids? Like, it's like we live in this world where vampires are real, but they're just really rare and they're just kind of random. And if you lived your life on full vampire alert, you would kind of be weird and closed off. But, like, are we just going to accept that every once in a while a vampire is going to come and suck the blood out of somebody? Like, how do you, because I'm thinking, like, what we need is we need to set, like, some kind of mentoring guidelines or code. But then, like, one of the yeah. first things that they established in the Oprah special is, like, the first stage of grooming is making sure the adults are super cool and think you're ultimately trustworthy with their children.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is what a good mentor would try to do too. So fuck, man.
Yeah. I guess I draw the line in the sand where you start, leaving your children in inappropriate situations with this person.
Yeah.
And
overnight,
when I say
sleeping in the same
yeah,
bed, like installing a fax machine, getting unlimited access to your child through the internet or phone.
Unsupervised access. Like,
yeah.
I personally would say that your child should never be alone with another human being who isn't part of your family.
But even then, the part of your family
yeah,
is...
Yeah, I know, that can yeah. be the most insidious...
Right.
The insidious place for abuse is in the family, and it
right.
probably happens more often than not in the family.
Right.
But I think, you know, at least there's a layer there that you can say, okay, well, this person we know nothing really about,
mm-hmm.
should not be allowed to spend time alone with this child. Like, if they want to mentor them, get them in an official situation. Get
yeah.
them... You know, at this camp with Peyton Manning, where there are other people around, and at least there would be people there to tell the tale. But, like, that's the thing. There wasn't.
Yeah.
When you have a place like Neverland that he has crafted to be his sexual abuse hideaway.
Right.
It's pretty fucking hard to do that. And I go back and forth on how much I blame these parents, because I get
Man,
it. Like,
yeah.
they were stupid. They were very, very stupid for trusting this person who they didn't know that much about.
Yeah.
So quickly. But at the same time, like, we talk about parasocial relationships all the time, right? They
yes.
felt that they knew him. They felt that Michael Jackson is a good man who cares about children, who
loves
all the children and helps
does.
Them,
Look
right?
how happy he makes people.
And he's
around kids all the time. They're part of a stage act. It's
right. It, But at the same time, like, they're also think that they're doing a good thing for their child, because you get Wade in that situation where the biggest pop star in the world is mentoring him.
And one of them parlayed it into a fairly successful, like,
yeah, Wade
choreography.
Did. I mean, Wade is one of the highest profile dance choreographers in the world.
And they still have, like, very complicated feelings about Michael Jackson.
Right.
Like, it's not like they...
But that's what I mean. The parents here, like... They thought they were doing something good
yeah.
for their children,
and their
they
children
had a little
was
bit
on
of reservations
the whole time. And I think
right.
parents think that if this was happening to their child, they would have, like, this hollowed out 1,000-hour yacht. Like, they'd come back
right.
the next day, and there'd be something wrong. Capital S, capital W.
Yeah.
And so when the child's like, "No, man, I want to stay with Mike for the rest of the week. It's going to be awesome." They're thinking uh-huh. If this was something wrong, the child would be like, "I don't want to do this."
And I think parents also think that they would never let their child get into this situation.
They'd be too smart.
Right. They would never be so stupid. Are you kidding me? But that's not how this stuff works.
I also think, if we're being honest, there was also, they got caught up in the money and the fame and the fact that this transformed their life, and they looked the other way. I think they let
yeah.
that. I'm trying not to judge, But honestly, the real victims are the children there. They're having a hard time forgiving their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like a process. Like, I had a heart, like, I don't want to condemn them, but I also think that it was possible to make much better decisions, even in the time that they did. And if they had, like, you know, it seems like also the fathers had a better beat on the situation, too. Didn't one of them commit suicide?
Yeah, one of them did. James Safechuck's dad, I think, killed himself. Was it his dad? Yeah, I think it was Wade's dad. Like, it seemed like was he really was on
like,
board with
like him. Like, but Wade's dad. Oh, really? Because his brother, I remember thinking, like, when it became, or maybe it's a Safechucks. I got the two confused. I'm bad with names. And
yeah, I actually couldn't tell you.
Hey, before we go any further, I want to talk about our sponsor today, Keeps. Fact is, losing your hair sucks. And the other unfortunate fact is, 2 out of 3 guys will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. I certainly have, Jim. I don't know about you.
I got lucky. I dodged that bullet.
In fact, if I had started using Keeps 10 years ago, it might be called hair move instead of bald move. Keeps is here to help. They are the easiest and most affordable way to keep the hair you have. The FDA approved products used to cost a lot, but now, thanks to Keeps, they're inexpensive and easy to get. For 5 minutes now and starting at just $10 per month, you'll never have to worry about hair loss again. It used to be, because some of these the drugs that are found in the Keeps products are available only by prescription, they have a nifty way where they can hook you up with a licensed physician to retrieve and review your information online, recommend the right treatment for you, and get the prescription so you can get the medicine shipped to your door every 3 months. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. And a lot of people have tried them before, but they might not have gotten them at this price. I know that when I was in my early 30s, I started realizing I was losing my hair. The first realization was when I'd go to the beach and the top of my head would burn, and it never used to burn before.
Okay.
And I started using a competitor back in the day, but it was very expensive. I couldn't get the oral medication. I didn't have time to go to a doctor, and I thought that the topical solution you put to your head was kind of, it smelled funny, and it was like a greasy formulation. I've tried the Keeps product. Again, these products don't really grow hair back. They prevent your hair from falling out. Like, there's a complex biological reason why men's hair begins to fall out, and it chemically attacks that and prevents that from happening. So no one has to go bald now. We have solved this problem. If you're bald already, you got to wait for the Captain Picard solution. But if you're not if you're not bald now, Keeps can help you, and they can do it in a hassle-free, inexpensive way. It's only $10 to $35 a month, plus you get to keep your first month free. That's a pretty sweet deal for keeping your own hair, I think, Jim. So to receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/baldmove. That's key. I'm sorry. That's not key. That's KEEPS.com/baldmove. That's a free month of treatment at keeps.com/baldmove. Keeps, hair today, hair tomorrow. This podcast is also sponsored by us, Bald Move, through the club at club.baldmove.com.
What kind of crazy claims? Because we get a lot of talking points from these outside sponsors. We can say whatever we want here, right?
Listening to Bald Move does not cause cancer.
It will not make you bald either.
It will not directly lead to hair loss.
As long as you're using Keeps. I actually can't vouch for it not making you bald if you don't use Keeps.
But it's there's no causal relationship. It's casual at best.
Fair.
Using club.baldmove.com increases your perceived sexiness to those that you respect and admire around you. And
it's a very sexy community in Bald Move.
It is. The club, sexy as hell. And you can see that firsthand by going to club.baldmove.com. If you go to that page, you actually will get to sample a lot of the sexy content for free. You can see what a lunch with Jim and Aaron is. You can see what a quip is. You can be extolled the virtues of ad-free feed, so you don't have to hear me make up hilarious fake medication interactions with Bald Move. You can get all that without commercials by using our ad-free feeds. There's VIP sections of forums. There's tons of great features, video content, video versions of our podcast. Try it for free by going to club.baldmove.com. You can get a free 30-day trial just for signing up. club.baldmove.com. But yeah, I went back and forth between, like, obviously it's not as easy as, like, this transactional that these kids sold their parents. Like, I think that that's how some people like to frame it, like, oh, these parents sold their kids into sexual slavery. But I do think they got seduced by the wealth and the fame and the power and how this transformed their lives. And also and was good for their kids.
How it could transform their child's life. Yeah,
yeah, like, imagine if you're Michael Jackson's protege and, you know, I mean, like I said, I think I get it. I think they're in denial about a lot of this stuff, but I kind of get it.
For sure. There's other stuff to talk about sort of around the fringes, because I'm very much of the mind, like, okay, Michael Jackson's dead.
Uh-huh.
I saw a lot of radio stations have started to pull his music from their playlists. The creators of, like, The Simpsons have decided to pull one of the episodes with him in it from airtime on TV, from streaming services, from future DVD and Blu-ray box set kind of stuff. I think... So for the sake of the family, because these families, both Michael Jackson's family, Wade's family, Safechuck's, like, all of those people are going to probably be hurt by hearing his music in public venues. So I think I'm okay with sort of pulling that stuff out of the public limelight.
Well, and there's some things like no-brainers, like Simpsons, that are a cartoon, that and it's about, like, this person having a relationship with the young. It's not like he bonds with Homer, he bonds with Lisa and Bart. That's, you can't.
Well, I think it's,
you got to pull that one off the shelf.
Maybe I don't know, because, like, I'm looking at this, like, what do they have a choice to interact with?
Mm-hmm.
You hear, like, a Michael Jackson song at a ball game or something. Well, you didn't have a fucking choice, you know? That just kind of surprised you out of nowhere and could cause some real emotional harm.
Sure.
Whereas, like, you go buy a box set of The Simpsons, you know they did a Michael Jackson episode. So maybe you shouldn't buy that box set. Or maybe figure out which episode it is and don't watch it.
I'm just saying, as a creator standpoint, if this was my product and it's a show that's been at least partially marketed to families and children over the years, I'm just saying I wouldn't feel comfortable with that remaining in my catalog. It's not.
Yeah.
And I think I think none of this is a moral imperative. You can do whatever the hell you want.
Here's the thing: I'm still going to listen to Michael Jackson's music. He was one of the most amazing performers of all time.
Right.
And I love his music.
And I think that everyone's going to feel differently about that. Like,
yeah, for
you
sure.
might feel different about that if you were, you might feel different about that if you're a victim of child abuse yourself.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and, like, you know, one of the things they said, statistically, one out of every six men were inappropriately sexualized as young people. And that's something that I know is not talked about, and they do a lot of there's a lot of men like Anthony Edwards of Top Gun and ER fame was one of the celebrities in the Oprah show that came forward about being a survivor of child sex abuse. And there's a football player that was in the crowd too, and he had some interesting insights on it. But, like, it does seem like it's something that we should, there's a lot of stigma and shame, and I wonder how much of that is to blame for a lot of the backlash against some of this Me Too abuse stuff. If, like, one out of six men actually is sexually abused as children, and it's such a thing that we don't really talk about and don't understand and make people repress, like, I can see people being pissed that, like, well, women who are adult are getting, and me, I don't get this. Like, I wonder if some of this is just misplaced anger and rage and shame.
Yeah.
Because, my God, it seems it's increasingly hard for me to understand how much some of this backlash against the Me Too movement, this thing shows, and Terry Crews, this should be something that we're all in on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it should just be not, it should be societally unacceptable where it's not criminal, in fact criminal, to inappropriately sexually take advantage of people in any context. It's dehumanizing. So,
yeah.
So what people, like, I think corporations, like you said, like, I think if you want to be a good citizen, you have to understand that playing certain artists to have a reputation for having a certain amount of abuse is going to pretend everyone's going to be thinking about it. And some people in the audience that experience it are going to have some really intense negative reactions to it. And you should think about that personally. Yeah. Like, so let's talk about the other thing is, like, R. Kelly.
There's not a problem for me. I've not really ever listened to R. Kelly.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think there's also differences between artists that are alive and there still 100% profiting. Is.
Yeah, I don't know why Michael Jackson's family should not still profit off of the work that he did.
I don't think they're handling this very well. They're in full bunker going to war against these men mode. The state of Michael Jackson are like swearing legal vengeance.
I've seen like Paris and stuff talking on Twitter about it.
Yeah, like the families, and there's like, you know, a lot of the family are still public figures, and I think there is you can't demand, but I think there's an expectation and hope that some of the more famous family members can come forward and try to heal this a little bit or make sense. Like, because the other thing is like Michael Jackson, super predator. But the other thing that I don't think we talk about child abuse, and it's kind of interesting in the context of this vampire analogy, is that a lot of times victims of abuse ritually do that abuse to other children.
Yeah.
And they take that trauma, and that sometimes can fuck them up in the head and lead to that later in life. So it's like, we know for a fact that Michael Jackson went through a lot of abuse. Yeah. Michael Jackson was raised in a very extreme cult. One of the fucking triggering things to me was I'm sitting here watching this fucker doing this emotionally inappropriate birthday tribute to this little boy, and he makes it into a Jehovah's Witness talking point at one point. He's like, well, no, you know, of course I don't celebrate birthdays, and you should really give presents to your parents for giving. And I'm like, you motherfucker is raping these children, and you're trying to preach about not celebrating birthdays?
Yeah.
Tell us about the Easter Bunny next, you fuck. Like, I went, like, I fucking almost broke my television. I was so pissed.
Yeah, it's pretty personal, right?
Yeah. 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 It's like, you know, like,
and that's what I mean when I talk about, like, maybe we should pull the music from public venues. Because,
right.
That feeling, right? Like, something could strike a nerve and be very personal.
And, like, yeah, like, if you can, like, Smooth Criminal is a fucking jam.
Oh, I can't name a song of his that isn't a jam.
And, you know, and, like, I think that, like, I was, like, also, like, I, a lot of his, like, the Jackson 5 is in my Christmas list.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, little kid, and, like, you know, like, I, sometimes when I listen to that, I can hear, like, Joe Jackson's belt cracking in the background, and how fucking horrific, like, that's, like, child slave labor that I'm listening to. It's, but that's the thing, is, like, if you can, some people are going to be able to compartmentalize that better than others, and I think that it's a bad idea to dismiss the people that can't as snowflakes. It's a bad idea to dismiss the people that can as unthinking monsters. And maybe we should have those, like, in our friend circles, those are absolutely, in our family circles, are absolutely conversations we should have. Like, what do we think as a unit of civilization about how we should handle it? Because, oh, you know, Jimmy got molested as a boy and we don't know it. And, like, Mary got raped as a grown woman and we might not know that. Like,
yeah,
you know, how easy do we want to make it? How comfortable do we want to make everybody? And are, like, people like Roman Polanski and R. Kelly and Woody Allen, are they still alive to be making money?
And that's the important distinction, I think. Yeah, is if Michael Jackson was still alive, I would feel very weird and very bad, and I probably wouldn't ever buy one of his albums again. However, yeah, he's not alive. He can't benefit from me still enjoying his music. So I think, in as much as it doesn't hurt the families that have been affected by this, or the other people who would be affected by this, it's okay for me to listen to his music. That's personally how I feel about it. And that doesn't make him not a monster. I'm not trying to defend the man.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying this is good music that I enjoy listening to. And I don't think that they should be forced to listen to it.
Yeah,
so,
and I
so
also
get it out of their faces.
Some of this backlash and negativity is a racial component too. Like, you know, the black community does not have a lot of, like, I mean, they do. Like, that's the reason we have Black History Month, is to let, like, no, actually, there's a lot of great black leaders in culture and popular culture and science and industry and all that stuff. But it's perceived that, like, you know, white people have so many icons they can look up to, and, like, we lionize people that are actually slaveholders and, like, look up to them as our founding fathers. And, you know, I think there's some anger when, like, a guy like OJ or R. Kelly and Michael Jackson get perceived to be taken down, because it's like, look at all the shit we swallow from these great white men. But, like, I think, I mean, obviously that's misplaced and that's unfortunate, but, like, I understand that reaction. I understand that being protective, and also this is another thing, I, you know, just trying to tear this black man down, and there was a kind of gross undercurrent of some of the more left-leaning sites of like sharing like comics that have come out and like defended Michael Jackson or black public figures. And it's like, can we give some people time to process this? You know, Bill Cosby and Michael Jackson. And like, I'm not saying that we excuse it and we just concede the public space and debate to people that are having trouble processing that. But can we have I understand that this is tough. If you are a super fan and you've derived a lot of self-worth and inspiration from this, and now that that's fun fueled by a monster, like, is that something that takes a while to come to grips with? Probably.
Yeah, and I think one of the big challenges here is that that man was so famous. He touched so many people's lives so powerfully that it's very difficult to step back and say, maybe that those feelings were misplaced.
Yeah, and the thing is that there's hundreds and thousands of people who Michael Jackson have made their lives better, like people that work for him, people that he paid their scholarships, people that he paid their medical bills, that he did benefit concerts.
Including many children who he didn't abuse.
And I'm saying, and he might have only abused 5 children, but he did abuse those children, y'all.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why, like, that other defense is, like, look at all the great things he did. How can he be a monster? History is replete with people who have done great things, sometimes because they're a monster. And they realize they're a monster, and they're desperately trying to dig themselves out of this monster hole. And also, another thing that we haven't talked about, because I don't have the tools to talk about it, is, like, how the fuck do we help pedophiles? Like...
I don't know.
One of the uncomfortable things is everything you can say about almost any type of sexual expression that we've come to understand that, like, these aren't personal. Like, why would a person make a personal choice to live a life sexually that gives them so much grief when they could just have a normal sexuality? Like, I think that applies to pedophiles and that, like, dear God, if there's the most hated, persecuted race and class of people alive, it's pedophiles, right? Yeah. So I don't think they're... like, choosing to do this, is there a way that we can get them as a treatment or effective help? Like, I don't feel like we're even really scratching the surface because and I'm probably going to get some emails. I'm not defending pedophiles, and I'm not saying that I think they should be free to molest children. I'm saying if we figure out a way to treat them effectively or get them into some kind of thing where they can control their urges or... I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but, like, there's got to be something, right?
No, I mean, it's I have a lot of respect for... I feel like the Safe Chuck guy is much more reserved about this, and he feels less comfortable talking about it, or he's less willing to talk about it. I'm sure Wade does not feel comfortable at all, but I have a lot of respect for Wade going through the process that he went through, you know, like, where he started going to therapy and he started talking about these things, but only in the terms that were like positive, right?
Right.
Like, oh, Michael Jackson and I, here's all the things we did together and how glorious it was. And then eventually, you know, with his son and everything, he started realizing, well, this is extremely unhealthy. I'm not actually getting to any source of problems here. And so he talked about the bad things that happened with Michael. I have a lot of respect for that process. And I feel like, if that was a process that Michael Jackson himself went through, and I'm hopeful that Wade can sort of break, you know, those repetitive cycles that happen with abuse.
Well, it's kind of like in South America, how they did the Truth and Reconciliation Act, where it's like, let's just, bad shit happened.
Yeah.
An injustice reigned for a lot of years. Let's not brush it aside. Let's actually unpack it and let's get to the bottom and let's all talk about it.
Because if you leave it under the covers, nothing gets resolved.
Yeah,
nothing can be
fixed. It seems like, I don't know what that would even look like with a guy like Michael Jackson. But like for these victims, being able to unpack it at their own pace and heal. And honestly, they're probably, I would imagine, they are doing psychological harm to themselves by coming forward. That like the amount of death threats and negativity that I've just seen in casual looking online, what they're getting in their real lives. And you're probably never ready to come forward with this kind of bombshell to drop in society and deal with the kind of crazy attention you're going to get. I feel like it's heroic because they're probably setting their personal advancement and getting and putting this chapter behind by doing this. But the other thing I want to talk about is a lot of times we talk about these men and women that are sexually abused as like they're ruined. And I think one of the themes that comes out of this is that you are certainly a changed individual. You're not going to be the person that you would have grown up had this thing not happened.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not damaged. You're not broken. You're not destroyed. You can be happy, and you can be successful. You can be famous. You can be powerful yourself. You can have any kind of career you want. It doesn't have to define you, but those are things that you have to take those steps to heal and to get to get to that good place.
Yeah, this is why I said I respect Wade so much, because he understands that. Like, mm-hmm. he talked about, you know, this feels bad, but it also feels good. Like, this is the thing that I need to heal. And, like, you look at him where he was in 2011 having panic attacks and breaking down. Like, that, as much as this is going to ruin his life, that was going to ruin his life 10 times over. Like, this is at least a path towards something that could make him personally feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's a hard road to walk down, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, and to do it very, very publicly, like just dealing with this, if it was a person that lived in the neighborhood that wasn't famous at all, would be hard enough. But to do this in the public eye, but it's like, that's why these guys can do so much good, because, you know, guys like Anthony Edwards and these guys and Terry Crews stepping forward and be like, this happened to me, and this doesn't do anything to take away from my masculinity or my worth as a human. And it's not about it's that stuff is so incredibly valuable because they have the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I think.
And I just guess I'm blown away by the people who don't believe them. Like, unless these guys are incredible actors
and have done
and bad faith
because
out their ass. I can't see how these people are possibly lying.
Because as we discussed, like, how the pathology of child abuse is not really well known and common knowledge. So these guys would have had to not only get their story straight with all their family and be willing to do this tour, this humiliating tour of shame, but also have done a shit ton of research on how pedophiles actually operate.
Right.
And come up with really compelling stories that are supported by all these. Like, yeah, there's no physical, there's no like fucking semen sample from Michael Jackson that we found on these children. But you look at the photos, the videos, the faxes, and you look at some of the details, like the elaborate alarm systems he had with his the sleeping quarters, and that he had these like works of child erotica that he used to show children, and conventional pornography, which, you know, I saw like people saying like, well, you know, like porn's porn and people have porn and child erotica, like that's a valid art thing. It's like,
man,
it's the context, motherfuckers.
I know, it's so easy to say, well, oh, he just liked being around kids, or oh, the porn was just porn, people have porn. But like, you got to take it all together,
like a
and
bookshelf,
say, what does this look like to you?
A bookshelf full of child erotica in an art collector's home among a collection of thousands is no big deal. A bookcase full of child erotica at a McDonald's would be a fucking problem. And this is a child erotica section at McDonald's, okay?
Yeah.
So,
and it's in the fucking playpin, and it's with the ball pit.
Yes.
And
parents are not allowed.
McNugget.
There are no cameras here. There's no recording devices. Like, come
dude,
on.
Dude, if you don't see the pattern here, I don't know what to tell you.
Yes.
I really don't.
Yeah.
And I have friends I know that will defend Michael Jackson to the death, will never believe this.
It's out of, but the
no
thing
matter
is,
what
it's,
evidence
it's out
there
of place
is.
Of ignorance, because they just don't know how child abuse works. And this documentary does an excellent job. And really the first 2 hours, the second 2 hours is almost like the aftermath. But it does such a great job of showing how this all works.
I thought the second 2 hours was the most compelling.
Huh.
Yeah. Just from the process of understanding it and dealing with it.
I guess you're right. You're right. I guess like I mean,
I'm not trying to be right. I'm just trying to state my opinion.
No, I was thinking like, what is most useful for prophylactic purposes? And that's like, as a parent, I think the first 2 hours is like, this is the signs. This is what a child who's in this relationship looks like. This is what the adult, this is the pattern of progression. And this is what these are the things to look out for. Whereas like the second part is all about the damage is done. How do you recover, rebuild, mitigate, and be better than you were, which is fine, but it's like, that's a containment strategy versus prevention.
Sure.
So, but yeah, like, I mean, obviously, one out of six men, and God knows how many, whatever the horrific thing.
Probably like five
thing,
out of six women, women, I'd have to guess, yeah.
You know, that second thing is the medicine.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody, and that's one of the things that makes me so angry about the way things are divvied up in America, is I know firsthand how hard it is, even if you have insurance, to get help. To go to the fucking list of doctors and to call them and to find the ones that have availability and the ones that take your particular type of insurance and what their pay rate is. And it's very tough, but it's the only way forward. So there's programs out there to help for free. There's hotlines to call. There's a lot of information online. There's that Oprah episode highlighted some resources and things that you could look at too. That's part of the HBO package that's collected with this. Hmm. And if you are in that one out of six or three out of five, you know, you don't have to live with this shame and feel like you're alone and feel like you did something wrong. You can get help. You can be a better version of who you already are. And I'm glad I watched this. This is a tough one to watch too, man.
I think it finally just puts a nail in the coffin of this idea that Michael Jackson just liked being around children.
That he was a Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he was forever young and had the mentality of a child and enjoyed their company. That's not it.
No,
y'all.
He had an adult, he had a very seemingly adult understanding of how relationships work. And
yeah, I mean, if you want to understand it, look at when he called these children after losing touch with them.
Right.
It's when the fucking accusations came out and he needed their help, otherwise he was going to fucking jail.
Love bomb him. It's, yeah. It's
transparent and it's disgusting.
It's honestly cult recruitment tactics, which I think is interesting, since he grew up in one. And like we've said many times, those cult tactics, you think they won't work on you, but they do. They work on everyone. They're universal and they work super good on children.
I think I've been okay for the last like 20 years to just sort of sweep, you know, Michael Jackson's weirdness under that rug.
And
like,
lots
well,
of stuff,
they never proved anything. Yeah. They went to court a couple times,
right.
And surely it would have come out if that was actually the case. But
yeah,
honestly, no. He's a very powerful man, a very rich man. Was both of those things. And I think the public has just not wanted to accept this.
I tell you what, there had to be. I also wonder, because Neverland's not a place you just live at as a bachelor. What's the staff at Neverland?
It's got to be in probably 100, I would imagine.
I mean, I was saying dozens, but like...
Yeah, to do all the...
There's got to be half a dozen fuckers that helped him too. Got to be, right?
Or at least turned an eye to some very strange behavior.
Some, yeah.
Yeah.
And I get it that the parents are doing it too, but like... These people saw this pattern repeat again and again and again and again with different boys, different there's got to be some people. That's the other thing, like much like the Fyre Festival, where it's like, gee whiz, only one person's responsible for all this, huh? No other, everyone else's hands are blameless, huh? Huh? I bet there's some dirt. There's some dirt under fingernails, blood on some hands, and I wonder. I mean, that's not the point of this documentary.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there is any profit into looking at that because, yeah, I don't know. How do you prevent this? How do you make it to where, I mean, I just, if you're not a pedophile, that's the thing. Like a pedophile, I guess I understand. Pedophile enablers, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
What's the incentive?
You're as disgusted by this as everybody, but you're going along with it because he's your boss or because he's got a lot. Like, that's the shit that blows my mind.
Yeah.
So, all right. Leaving. Are we ready to leave Neverland and burn that fucker through the ground?
Please. I hear it's called like something Valley Ranch now. It's like
don't ruin ranch dressing
like,
for me.
They are trying to sell it. It's on the market. It's $35 million in case of any.
Who buys
of our,
that place?
I don't know.
Like Marilyn, like some kind of weirdo new Marilyn Manson type that just like fully leans into the truly haunted nature of this place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe you can turn it to like it also be like would be interesting. It'd be interesting to like for not for profit to take that over and turn it into like a make a wish thing and like maybe like a museum of child abuse, like some kind of educational thing. But you'd have to get this like the estate of Michael Jackson's estate is a damn sight away from reconciling any of this truth.
Oh, yeah.
And they would have to be involved, I'm sure. So, All right. That's Bald Move TV. As always, you can send feedback to tv@baldmove.com, and you can discuss this stuff on the forums at forums.baldmove.com. American Gods Season 2 comes back this weekend on Sunday. Cecily and I will be talking about that on Bald Move Television next week, as well as a bunch of other stuff that we probably don't even know about, but there'll be a podcast on it. Check that out. And until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.